Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and for the rest of the program today, we're going to shift from election politics to policy. Let's start with a quick finance lesson. When you get a loan or use a credit card, odds are you're given information about the annual percentage rate, the APR. The idea is that one number can give you a sense of how much you can expect to pay for borrowing money, interest, fees, other costs. And by comparing APRs among loans or credit cards, you can get a better sense of what will work best for you and your finances and whether you're likely to get taken to the cleaners. Lenders, in a lot of cases, are actually required by law to disclose that figure. What isn't regulated, for the most part, at least at the federal level, is how high the APR can be. What also isn't regulated are non-bank lenders, which have grown significantly over the past few decades and are often willing to give money to those who can't get loans from traditional lenders. Many small businesses have to turn to those non-bank lenders and end up paying far more for those loans than they otherwise might have. For a few years now, there have been attempts among Illinois lawmakers to pass a bill to require APR transparency on small business loans from those lenders. So for the rest of the program today, we're going to talk about all this and why attempts at regulation have not made it through the state legislature so far. Brent Adams has been one of the people advocating for that change. He's a senior vice president of policy and advocacy at the Woodstock Institute, a nonprofit in Chicago that focuses on economic justice and racial equity in financial systems. Brent, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the time today.
And falling into debt traps can be financially devastating and can also be really embarrassing. And therefore, a lot of people don't want to share their stories. But the Woodstock Institute has connected us with one Illinois business owner who is willing to talk about her experience. For the reasons I just mentioned, though, she asked that we not use her name. So welcome to the program. Appreciate you being here. And I should also say, we reached out to two of the groups that have opposed this legislation. They weren't available to join us live, and our plans to tape an interview with one of them earlier this week fell through. But they did give us statements. We'll share those later in the conversation. So I'm going to start with our business owner. I understand this story begins with the COVID-19 pandemic. Briefly, how did that affect your business?
It does. It affected my business because my former partner was taken to the cleaners. We had to pay a settlement to close down our office, which we had a 10-year lease on. And so it really put the impetus and the charge and the fire in my belly to really start my business and to really pay for marketing that, frankly, I couldn't afford.
So what were your options when you had to pay for this marketing in terms of trying to get some more money?
Well, I looked at my local banks and I was too afraid to go in. I mean, I have, accounts at those local banks, but these are the guys with recreational vehicles, fancy cars, and I just didn't feel comfortable going in there. I had that or a credit card or asking my family for money, which was against my values at the time. So, and I was ashamed. So I started using Google, like any dodo.
And you ended up with one of these, I guess what they're called, non-bank lenders, right? What can you tell us about, how that worked?
It was a disaster. So I knew, I ended up on some web page that was something like nerdwallet.com, right? It sort of had the impression that it was a credible site, and it had all this list basically of paid advertisements and, click on this. These are the banks that we vet, which was the impression that I had. Of course, it's just an ad, but I clicked on one of those and I ended up on this rabbit hole of solicitations.
All right. So before we get to that, Brent, let me come to you now, Brent Adams with the Woodstock Institute. Say more, and I should say we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here, but say more than I did in the introduction about what exactly these non-bank lenders are.
Well, they are outfits that have no licensure requirement, no registration requirement. So it's really a shadowy industry, and that's not the term I just made up just now. That's how they've been described by others. So that is it's kind of a black box right now. What we do know is that they can charge, when you do calculate the APR, over 300% interest. So it is like payday lending, but for business owners.
Do we know where they're getting their money? I mean, the idea of banks is they take deposits from everyday people and then they lend that out. Where do we know about these groups?
I don't know a lot about that, in part, again, because it's such a shadowy industry. But investors of various types will invest in these companies. These companies raise capital that way because they're financially lucrative. The merchant cash advance industry, which is a form of revenue-based financing, has grown into the $20 billion range over the past few years. So this is a lucrative industry for investors.
All right, we need to take a break. We will continue this conversation about attempts in the Illinois General Assembly to regulate these non-bank lenders, specifically as they relate to business customers, which do not have the same disclosure requirements that are present for consumer loans. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about small business loans, specifically loans that businesses get from non-bank lenders, which are not regulated in the same way that banks are. We're talking about what that means for small businesses and the back and forth on regulating those kinds of loans here in Illinois. My guests are Brent Adams with the Woodstock Institute, a nonprofit that focuses on economic justice and racial equity in financial systems, and also a business owner who went through the experience of taking out one of these loans, ended up paying back many more times than they borrowed. We were connected to her by the Woodstock Institute, and at her request, we're not using her name on air. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Maybe you have questions about this, or, what do you think of this proposal to require more transparency? Or maybe you've even had to turn to one of these loans yourself. Let us know. 800-222-9455. So returning to our business owner, you mentioned, so when we left off before the break, you loaded this website. It had all these ads. What did the actual process, like how did you choose? What did the process of getting this loan look like?
Well, they asked me for typical credit lending. It was a typical application, right? But what was strange about it was that there were so few. They wanted maybe 2 or 3 months of my bank statements as well. But there were not many other documents. They didn't ask for, which I was grateful for, right? I was like, oh, okay, you're not asking for collateral. This isn't, you're not asking for my mortgage statement. And that seemed good to me, right? You're not asking for my car statements. And so I thought, like, this is legit. I was on the phone with this, he called himself a broker, right? He's from Florida. And he gave me all kinds of assurances. I had never taken out a loan before. And so I was fairly naive. And he told me that there was no penalty if I were to pay it off early. And I remember that because I was driving and I was nervous. I wrote it down after I parked because this information was going to help me, I thought. And so I had it all written down after our conversation.
In retrospect, were any of those things that seemed like benefits at the time, do you think of them as like red flags now, or how do you, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like a fool. It was, the money came to me within, you know, a couple of days, and I think I borrowed about 20 grand or so, maybe 22. And every day thereafter, for a matter of several months, I was having automatic debits about like $400 a day. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was so much. And I was working like a racehorse to keep that amount of money and more in my account. So it was terrifying and grueling, and I just felt like a beast of burden. You know, it was hard. So
the way it works is there were automatic debits from your bank account, and that was like part of the agreement, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And there was, you know, now I look back and I've looked over my contract with these, with this company, and there is something there that looks like APR, but it's some other percentage number, and they come up with some, you know, to me it signified APR, but it wasn't. Woodstock, the people at Woodstock helped me figure out the interest, and it was around 300%. It was crazy. I paid off the loan almost entirely, and they wanted more. And so I just told them, You can come and sue me. I'm gonna report. This is just absurd. I've satisfied my obligation. I'm not going to give you any more money.
Brent, how common is this story? Just what do you, when you, as you hear this, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but as you hear this story, what are you thinking?
Well, it's increasingly common, and the number that was on her contract was a quote specified percentage, which is a secret kind of term of art in the industry, which means the percentage of your revenue that they're taking to repay the loan. So 15%, when an APR sounds affordable, but 15% of your daily revenue, that's a lot, particularly when you compare it to the amount of time that you have to repay the loan, which is what APR is. It's an amount of cost over a per specific unit of time. So that is, you know, it is no coincidence that they put a percentage on a line on your contract in a similar way that you would see an APR. It is, in our view, actively and purposefully deceptive.
So what would change if Illinois were to impose this sort of requirement on APR transparency?
Well, one thing I would have mentioned before answering that, we have a website, aprforall.com, because you stole our number one talking point at the beginning. It is not fair that you can walk into a bank as a consumer and get an APR disclosure, but when you say you're a small business owner, you get nothing. So that's what it would do to a large extent is level the playing field, because small businesses are job creators, and increasingly individual people are small business owners. So it's high time that we close this loophole, which is effectively what it is, and give small business owners the same disclosures that we give to consumers.
So what are you asking the state legislature to do exactly?
So the bill that we have introduced and been working on for now, this is the fourth year, would follow the lead of California and New York in requiring non-bank lenders to disclose APR to their borrowers. In addition, the bill would require them to register, which is tantamount to like getting a license, and report data to the state. So those are the three main components of the bill.
All right, I want to share a statement from one of the groups that opposes this legislation here in Illinois. This is from Scott Talbot, Executive Vice President of the Electronic Transactions Association, which is a national organization. I should say we invited him to join us live. He couldn't make that. We were going to tape a conversation with him to play some clips earlier this week, but apparently where he was traveling, there was some severe weather, and that just didn't work out. So anyway, this is the statement from the Electronic Transactions Association. Scott Talbot says, quote, "The question isn't if there should be disclosures. The question is which disclosure is best suited for small businesses. The APR was created in 1968. It works for long-term loans like mortgages, car loans, and revolving debt like credit cards. With today's new lending products, small businesses have a variety of short and long-term financing options to choose from." He goes on, "Unfortunately, APR, which annualizes interest rates, does not work for short-term loans that only last a few days, weeks. ETA supports," that's the again, the Electronic Transactions Association, "supports the disclosure of total cost of capital, which is the total amount of the loan or advance and fees. Businesses borrow for short periods of time, say to buy flowers for Mother's Day or beer for St. Patrick's Day. They intend to repay the loan once the event is over. They're focused on how much income their effort will raise, not the percentage rate. With those dynamics in mind, small businesses want to know how much the financing will cost in dollars. As such, they focus on the total cost of capital rather than a percentage rate. They inherently can evaluate the cost of capital as compared to their expected increased cash flow from the investment. Given these dynamics, total cost of capital is better, more effective disclosure for small businesses." End quote. Again, that's Scott Talbot with the Electronic Transactions Association. Brent, what do you think of that?
Well, you know, I began my career fighting the payday loan industry, and this is exactly what the payday loan industry said, because they are short-term loans, but the average payday loan interest rate, when we capped it at 36%, was 297%. This does not require any restrictions on how much they can charge. It does not restrict them from disclosing cost of capital, but APR, like miles per gallon, or like miles per hour or dollars per gallon, is the unit cost of financing. So a small business owner is entitled to the disclosure. They don't need to use a disclosure. We're just asking that they be entitled to it to make an apples to apples comparison based on the unit cost of financing. They can compare other metrics as well, the term of the loan, how much the loan will cost over time. But the unit cost of financing is, again, how we price financing in this country and is broadly understood by most small business owners and consumers.
I want to return to our small business owner, who again asked to remain anonymous, about the way businesses, in your experience, borrow money. Does what we heard from Scott there, from the Electronic Transactions Association, who's opposed to this disclosure, does that line up, the way businesses borrow money, does that line up with your experience?
Well, I mean, I guess that's exactly what I did, but I don't think that it's a fruitful and honest endeavor. I think it's usurious. He didn't answer the question. He diverted, right? And he started trying to get put the make the object of the sentence his new bright and shiny short-term loan. I don't know what the experience of other business owners has been, but I can speak to my neighborhood. Vacancies, vacant storefronts everywhere, because wealthy people use these huge buildings as tax shelters, and small business owners are hurting. It's very hard if you're not an organization or an institution to have, and you don't have backing to make a living. That's just how it is.
I have one more statement to read. This is from the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. They said, the Illinois Chamber represents member companies of all sizes and has concerns with the Small Business Financing Transparency Act, contained under House Bill 744 and similar proposals, given the legislation's regulatory scope that could possibly disrupt or impact financing tools offered by some of our members. Moreover, the Chamber urges caution on proposals that may inadvertently limit access to capital for entrepreneurs and small businesses. And then it says the chamber is always open to discussing with stakeholders and supporting pro-growth solutions that uplift all employers. Okay, Brent, how do you respond to that? The idea that this kind of regulation could make it a lot harder for people who are already having a hard time getting financing to get it.
The evidence is directly to the contrary to that point. And that also, by the way, is what the payday lender said, and it didn't transpire. So the reality is that the financing markets in California and New York are vibrant. In fact, there's research that shows that financing availability has improved in the state of New York. The reality is that small businesses lose $450 million a year. That is money that could be spent on affordable financing. It could be spent to create jobs. That's more than $1 million a day that small business owners are losing due to non-transparent financing. So in a way, it's making financing companies' lives more difficult by restricting the scope of their customer base, by causing small businesses to shut down. So this will improve some small businesses, expand the market for financing for companies that are engaged in the responsible financing effort. Responsible Business Lending Coalition is one of our lead partners, and the American FinTech Council, which are comprised of lenders who are part of this effort to create a responsible market that works for everybody.
We're almost out of time here. Last question to our business owner. What has this meant for you long term? It sounds like a pretty difficult experience, certainly in the time. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. Thank you for asking. It has been a long slog of admissions and shame, honestly. But I've come, you know, past it and have a very light footprint, and just try my very, very best every day to earn an honest living and to not ever become so desperate. You know, that was the word that I forgot to mention earlier when you asked why, you know, about my experience. I was desperate. I was afraid and desperate. And I don't want to ever create that situation again for myself.
Brent, last question. What are the prospects this year? What has been the main stumbling block for making this happen?
Well, we're optimistic that we will overcome some of the concerns. We are actively engaged with the opponents in trying to make changes and trying to compromise to make a bill that we can all live with, even though we're not necessarily all thrilled about. So our goal is to get this bill out of the House first this year. It's passed the Senate in the past. So if we get it out of the House, I feel really confident and really feel really good about our chances on the Senate side.
Brent Adams with the Woodstock Institute and a small business owner who has to remain anonymous. Thank you so much for being willing to share your story with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is it for us today here on the 21st Show. I should mention, if you want to find out more about that legislation, you can look it up on the Illinois General Assembly's website, ilga.gov. It is, I'm looking for it, I had the bill in front of me here a moment ago, House Bill 744, ilga.gov, HB 744. Coming up tomorrow on the program, there's been a lot of focus on how the ongoing war with Iran has affected gas and oil prices, but it's also caused a severe jump in fertilizer prices. We'll talk about what the Iran war means for the agriculture industry and farmers here in Illinois. Plus, the Milano Cortina 2026 Winter Olympics have come and gone, and we will talk now with some of the athletes with ties to the 21st state about their performance and what it's like to attend. First up, men's speed skater Ethan Seprin. It's all coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda, digital producer Colson Kahn, technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork, Reginald Hardwicks, our news director. We are a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.